Ladies and gentlemen, it's Sunday. The Football Scoop Podcast is back. Weird. Sunday after week zero. Holy smokes, it all happened. It was a great day of college football. I got college football experts Zach Burnett, John Bryce, Doug Samuels. I'm Scott Roussel, and I couldn't be happier. Sometimes you lose, Zach. It just happens. Anyway, great to have everybody. Gentlemen, games were played. We started in Ireland. I know I picked Rocco to win the game.
Props to you. Tell us why you picked Rocco.
I have faith in that young man. I believe quarterback is the most important position on the field. He is seasoned vet. I just thought he was going to be a difference maker. And honestly, Bryce, what I thought was it was going to be I think everybody thought it was going to be a close game. And in a close game in the fourth quarter, a guy who could manage it and then make that big play on third or fourth down, that's your game winner. And that's what it came down to. And that's what, honestly, my favorite moment from yesterday was sitting on my own sofa watching that game. And what it's like 2 minutes left, and they are fourth and three. And if you kick the field goal, you go up six. And they're going to timeout. I'm like, you go for this, right? Like, I don't want to be up six and give the ball back. So sure enough, he goes for it.
Taylor Mauser.
Yeah, great play call, great play design. Gets the running back off to the flat left. He breaks it, and they win the game. That was just, to me, great play call, great execution. And Rocco, the touch on that ball was a tough pass, and then the ball that he threw to the tight end, the drive before or earlier on that same drive was also just touch awesomeness. That's why I chose Rocco right there.
All the things you said about Rocco, though, you could also flip and say about Avery Johnson. Like, can make plays with his feet, does some really good stuff. I'd contend you could say that about either one of those quarterbacks, but only won.
I chose Rocco.
Also, I take Avery Johnson's dad in a fight outside the stadium.
Boy, I was getting ready to see if anyone was going to comment on that. Whatever.
I kind of saw a tweet about it. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
I thought Iowa State's secondary was the most important group on the field until they weren't. It seemed like they were making open field tackle after open field tackle. And then Matt Wells, new K-State offensive coordinator, got some double moves and found got behind them for a couple touchdowns. I like that. I don't mean to sound like a masochist, and by no means is their season over, but yesterday was a disaster for Kansas State. I mean, you lose a very winnable game. Most importantly, you lose Dylan Edwards, your best offensive player not even on offensive play, but on a punt return. He immediately exited the game, and no one afterwards had really an explanation as to why he left and when he'll be back. So I presume they're waiting to get back on American soil. But that's something to monitor, certainly for K-State. And in a conference where the margin is so much slimmer than every other league, I believe one of the Big 12 PR people said that there are more fourth quarter lead changes in the Big 12 than every other conference, and that checks out to me. So when the margin between 7-2, 6-3, 5-4 is that slim to lose your biggest rivalry game on week zero and then have to fly 12 hours home, that's a bitter pill to swallow for K-State.
Yeah, I would say great coaches make adjustments, though. Great coaches are able to make adjustments. I wouldn't write K-State off, is all I'm saying.
No. But, I mean, Chris Klieman said that they've got 11 games to play, and by no means is their season over. But they're going to look back in November and be like, it hurts to miss that one.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to your point, Zach, they just wasted so many opportunities over the course of the game. I mean, they outgained Kansas State by like 70 or 75 yards. This will be one of your interesting winning box scores nuggets. But they just wasted so many opportunities. And then Zach and I know we're talking about, and Doug's already commented on Avery Johnson really liking his game. But I thought on the fourth and short there in the second half, he made a terrible read and ran into the contact when there was a lane there that would have sustained a drive right around midfield. And I thought that was a very critical point for Kansas State. But you're right. This is immediately behind the eight ball, so to speak, because it's not only losing your opener, it's losing a conference game. And with the playoff the way it is, you're sitting there looking at Like you might have what one game margin for error the rest of the year.
That and having to fly home and see that Kansas is just dominating Fresno State. Just real life before we talk about a couple other games. That game ended and I switched over to FCS. Incarnate Word was at Nicholls State. Nicholls State's right down the road from me. And I know a bunch of those guys, Tommy Rabacki and Gabe Fertitta, new offensive coordinator, new head coach, new offensive coordinator. What a win for those guys. The Colonels looked good. It was hot. I was thrilled for those guys. Great win.
That was huge. Like Incarnate Word ranked number four. Clint Killo has done a really good job there and was in position where he can become Incarnate Word's all-time wins leader midway through this season. So that was a significant win for Nicholls and a very stunning setback for Incarnate Word. Now, Incarnate Word lost some really good players to the transfer portal, but nonetheless, they were not expected to come out and have that sort of flat performance.
One of those weird nuggets that you catch on a broadcast, you're like, seriously? I happen to see long ball, like 60-yard, 70-yard touchdown pass. The young man, kid was flying. He outran the DB by forever. And broadcast says that's the guy's second catch ever, both for like massively long touchdowns. Last season, he had one catch, one long touchdown. This season, he has one catch, one long touchdown. Like, all right, sure.
Maybe throw him some more deep balls.
I think Fertitta will dial that up. All right, let's bring it back to FBS. So you guys talked about Dan Mullen, and you're like, Mullen's got dudes. He's a great ball coach, X's and O's scheme guy. But I don't know if he knew Idaho State was coming to town.
Holy moly, that UNLV defense has a lot of holes in it. So that's, kudos to Idaho State for how well it played. And even after UNLV gained momentum in the game for the first time, Idaho State responded and kept responding. But I know Zach, that was one of his emphatic bet the overs this year. And you might want to hedge those bets now, Zach.
Yeah. I'm looking at UNLV's upcoming schedule. I'm not seeing a whole lot of stops. They got to turn around and go at Sam Houston on Friday. UCLA comes to town. You've got Air Force, Boise. He's assembled a transfer portal, Power Four, all-star team. And I think we saw – on both sides of the coin, why these guys are at UNLV, right? Mm-hmm.
So that's fair. Did you guys get to see any of Jalen Daniels playing quarterback for Kansas?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Kid's good. When he's healthy, he's good, huh?
And it seemed like every single play, Kansas was kind of running the same concept of play action to one side and then leaking the back out into the flat on the other side, and Fresno State never stopped it. And I'm by no means that easy, but Kansas was like, if you're going to give us the free money, we're going to take it every single time. And he ended the game with more touchdown passes than incompletions.
That's awesome.
That's another
Zabrowski and Ince. That's a matchup right there. I love that. That's awesome. All right, Western Kentucky, Sam, any thoughts?
You know, kudos. Man. Sorry.
Go ahead, JB.
I was just going to say kudos to Western Kentucky for – I apologize for that, but kudos to Western Kentucky with that kind of performance, particularly in light of the fact, and Zach was there with me, I think, when they discussed this at the DFO meetings in Frisco in May, and thank you for sending us to that. Western Kentucky lost its four starting defensive linemen from last year's team, all to Power Four teams, and they signed deals worth more than $3 million collectively. So that Western Kentucky team lost more than 60 players off of its roster last year that was so good and won so many games and played for a conference title and all of that. And yet they come back out and have that sort of emphatic win. And again, like I just have to hammer home that number. They lost four starting defensive linemen for a total of more than $3 million.
Tyson Helton remind you a little bit of Lane Kiffin?
Yeah, I can see that.
I was thinking more Lincoln Riley for some reason in my head.
Here's a very strong similarity that Lane Kiffin and Tyson Helton share. when Lane Kiffin was Nick Saban's offensive coordinator, he was prone to get, quote, ass chewings. And when Tyson Helton was Jeremy Pruitt's offensive coordinator at Tennessee, he was prone to get the same exact type of chewings, to the point that at one point I think Tyson Helton didn't tell Jeremy Pruitt and turned his headset off during a game so that he could just focus on calling his offense and not deal with it. That's not a made-up story. That really is a true story. So
I see Western as a place they're like, hey, snap the football, let's play. Like, my guys are my guys. And, yes, I understand where I am in the pecking order, and there are teams that can come in who can pay $3 million, take my entire D-line out. That's life. Go recruit some new dudes. Go transfer some new dudes. Put 11 on the field. Let's go play. That's what I see out of them. And Lane kind of has that, you know, Lane's in a different place economically, financially, but Lane has had to deal with some of that too. And he's like, look, just give me the best guys we can get. Let's go play ball.
Loyal listeners will note that on Thursday's pod, I recommended Western Kentucky and laying the points. And that was that free money was out there, and I hope everyone got it. Western won by 17. Sam lost. I was watching that game with interest because it's Phil Longo's debut at Sam. And he lost his top 16 tacklers from last year's team. And I don't know if that's a record. I've never heard of any other defense in college football history losing its top 16. So they gave Western a fight, but they ran out of dudes, ran out of depth towards the end. It seemed like every time Western caught Sam in man coverage, they're just throwing it up outside, and it seemed like the Western wide receivers were winning. And so I'm going to be watching Sam with interest because I think Phil Longo is going to do some really good things there, but I think this might be a tough season, a tough year one for him.
Yeah, they had to replace a lot from a 10-win team. You mentioned losing their top 16 tacklers, but offensively they started slow out of the gate, only 3 points in the first quarter, and then I think they scored 7 in the second quarter, and then they exploded in the second half. Like the first 5 minutes of the second half came out firing hot, but then they didn't score any in the fourth quarter. So it was slow start and really slow finish that really kind of doomed them. And Tyson Helton dealt up some one-on-one matchups that they were clearly the better team in one-on-one matchups.
Timmy Chang has a clause in his contract that says if we Hawaii beat a Power 4 team here in Hawaii, he gets $7,500 bonus. I believe that Stanford should have to pay that. Just an absolute disgrace. Hawaii is what Hawaii is. Stanford, I don't know what Stanford is. I have no idea what Stanford is, and I don't think we're going to know. I think it's going to be a rough season for Stanford football.
This Stanford football team rushed for their first rushing touchdown by a running back since September 9th of 2023 in that game against Hawaii. Like, for a proud Stanford program that would get in 13 and 14 personnel and pound power at you 100 times a game, for them to have a stat like that is absolutely astonishing. And then to lose to Hawaii on top of it is inexcusable.
Yeah, when Stanford scored its first touchdown, it was a 20-play, 90-something yard drive, and it's like, this is Stanford football. And I'm just sitting there watching, like, I'd feel better about it if it wasn't their seventh offensive possession of the game to score their first touchdown. And then they get that stop, and they're running it right down Hawaii's throats, and then Ben Goldbranson throws a horrible interception. Great play by the Hawaii defensive end to make that catch, but you can't put it anywhere within his vicinity. So he intercepts it, and that's pretty much your ball game, because Stanford wasn't going to be able to go down and score in a gotta-have-it situation. Not a whole lot of talent there. Andrew Luck has his work cut out for him.
Andrew Luck, Frank Wright, absolutely. Stanford in general has never recovered from post-COVID. And whatever you feel about that, some of the most severe measures were taken during the COVID lockdown out there. And in the 4 full seasons since COVID, Stanford has gone 12-36, now 12-37 with that loss yesterday keep in mind, in 2015, so a decade ago, Stanford had a 12-win season. Now they have 12 wins aggregate in four-plus seasons. And I just think that that's a program. There's not alignment on campus there. You have people that want to continue to de-emphasize athletics rather than push for it. And I just think that Stanford is in for considerable more losing. I know Andrew Luck is in and they're trying to fix it, but they're way, way behind on NIL. They're obviously one of the last bastions of not really allowing any transfers in a time when there's never been more free agency and free movement in college football. They're continuing to dig a hole. I thought Navy and Stanford were the two programs that maybe were hit the hardest during COVID, and Navy has found a path back out and doing some incredible things, and Stanford has not found that path. And then we would be negligent if we didn't talk about the Hawaii kicker, Kansei Matsuzawa, who taught himself to kick via YouTube and first went the junior college route because he's from Japan and he had to learn English. And so he is this year's Diego Pavia after week zero. So anyway, I can't wait to watch what he does, but he scored scored 11 points, for Hawaii. He scored 11 points, including the Rainbow Warriors last nine and the game winning field goal as time expired.
So I know we're going to head into a discussion about Stanford, and I want to just highlight something John said there. There was about people pushing to de-emphasize athletics at Stanford. So Stanford is annually first, second, or third in the Director's Cup. Like, they dominate in Olympic sports. Obviously, as an academic institution, they're elite of the elite of the elite. So my question then, I guess it's a rhetorical one, is why are the voices there to de-emphasize athletics allowed to thrive when Stanford is elite at everything it does except football and men's basketball? And I understand those are expensive sports to be good in, but find me anything worth doing in big-time sport that doesn't cost something. And the collective net worth of Stanford alums, I'm guessing, is second only to Harvard in this country. That's just a total guess. But Stanford's never seemed like a place that's hurting for money, either within the school or its alums. So I just don't understand how Stanford can allow itself to be where it is in the major men's sports, considering everything else is the cream of the crop there.
Stanford has the largest percentage of its entire athletics department endowed, which means it's fully funded. It's like 88%. Like, Stanford is what every other athletic department around the country endeavors to be from a financial standpoint. But there's just, again, there's not alignment on that campus. Maybe Andrew Luck will be the driving force that creates some synergy there. But right now, it's not there. And then, obviously, the program was cratered when they had to dismiss Troy Taylor, and here we are.
Andrew Luck was a very, very good football player, who then made the interesting decision to step away from the NFL and then kind of went off the grid and was around Stanford a lot. So, I mean, he's obviously extremely well-known on campus and by all university leadership and all that stuff. But – and his father, you know, well-journeyed athletic director, NCAA guy, multiple ventures that didn't necessarily succeed. Is Andrew qualified to, you know, basically be running Stanford football and to some degree Stanford athletics? I have no idea. But
I think you could make that argument, but I think you could also make the argument that perhaps no one attached to Stanford's words carry more weight than Andrew Luck. Like, he had an outstanding career as a can't-miss prospect. Is he qualified? That's a legit concern, but if he goes to people and asks for something, I think people bend over backwards to try and make it work, because it's coming from him and not someone maybe overqualified that doesn't have that same, I don't know, aura about him.
I like that.
Yeah, I guess if you could go get John Lynch, if you're Stanford, then you do that. But John Lynch is unavailable. But to Doug's point, Stanford – Andrew, if the people that need to open up their checkbooks at Stanford see Andrew Luck's calling, they're going to answer. If Joe Schmo that was an NFL GM, blah, 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 that's just not Andrew Luck, those calls might not get answered. I see what you're saying, Scott, but I agree with Doug.
I'm not implying there's not a position for him, but in today's college football, with, I mean, everything has changed. It's no longer just, hey, I'll line up my 22 versus your 22 and we'll, you know, hit, knock heads and see who can push harder. Your 22 changes constantly. It's a whole new set of rules, and the rules are different this year than last year. And the money's changed. And there's just a lot more that goes into general management than there was 2 years ago or 3 years ago or a year ago or 5 years ago. I don't know. I don't know if they have the right plan. With that said, the news of the week, obviously college football's back, but the exciting news for some of us, a friend is back. Pat Fitz got his deal settled with Northwestern. His name was totally cleared. In my opinion, it's disgusting what happened to him 2 years ago. Pat Fitz is a great dude. I've known him probably 15, 20 years. Consider him a friend. And he'll be back. He'll be really good for football. He always he has his entire life he's given to football. And so Pat's got one son who's at Northwestern, junior or senior maybe. he's got a freshman at Iowa. He's got his youngest son is a junior in high school. Pat's ready to get back in. So naturally, people go, okay, he did it at the highest level in Northwestern, very academic, you know, small private. It's kind of like Stanford. Kind of is. Yeah. There's a lot of other people think he's an upper Midwest guy, though.
Yeah.
You know, some people talk about Iowa, but Stanford, hey, could we? And if so, that changes, that trumps everything.
Well, but part of the discussion we just had on Stanford, even though Pat's been fully exonerated and the lawsuit very clearly spells out he had no knowledge of the alleged hazing incidents or the fact that it was so widespread and rampant, apparently. But would Stanford have enough people sign off on a Pat Fitzgerald just from a optics standpoint? You know, I don't know that answer. I would think another fair question is how long will Kirk Ferentz go? And he's addressed that in some of his press conferences. He gets asked about it all the time, even just in casual settings. And, you know, I think we've already discussed off camera over the last few days that we could see Pat being a very natural fit at either one of those.
Question for the class. So I think I recall reading a quote from Pat many years ago where he said he'd never been happier in his life than when he was the linebackers coach at Northwestern. I think we can also infer that he's not hurting for money these days. So with those two established, do we think he's dead set on being a head coach, or would he be open to a defensive coordinator? I have no idea. I'm asking you all.
I think he is one of the most qualified head coach candidates I can imagine. And because of that, I think he would be doing himself a disservice if he took a defensive coordinator role. So my expectation is he's a head coach for this upcoming season, you know, starting in December.
I think it'd be hard for him to go to just throw the Bears out there, go be the Bears linebackers coach when, you know, five times over the past 10 years, he was brought up as a head coaching candidate for the Bears. I think that would be a tough gig. Stanford makes a lot of sense. Iowa makes a lot of sense. You know, if Iowa were to open and Kirk Ferentz was to call it quits, but he has gotten more out of less than arguably any head coach. I mean, any head coach that I can think of that comes off to the top of my head. Question I want to phrase to maybe JB or some of you more well-traveled gents in the class. That there was I had heard at one time that Fitz used to take coaches out for a hot dog during their interview. And if they put ketchup on their hot dog in Chicago, they were scratched off the list. So if that was in Palo Alto, what's the equivalent? You guys got anything?
Well, you would probably have to have an avocado on your hot dog in Palo Alto.
Hard. Well, there'd be no meat involved. It might be an avocado dog. You never
First
know.
Of all, it would have to be a Beyond hot dog, and then it would have to have avocado.
Gotcha.
So I guess I'm learning I would have not been qualified to work under Pat Fitz at Northwestern.
You put ketchup?
I go ketchup and mustard on my hot dogs, no matter where it's from.
Scratch true that. Story. I'm at Stanford on Andrew Luck's pro day. I went to his pro day. So pro day was like, let's say it was at 11 or noon, something like that. We went over to football and they're like, we got there like 9. They're like, hey, it starts at 11, come back. So we're on campus. We went to whatever the union or wherever, you know, they got like 5 or 6 different little restaurants and walk up, get whatever you want. And there's all sorts of students sitting in there. I'm not kidding you. Say there were like 150 students in there. They're eating. Every single one of them was coding while they're eating and coding while they're, I've never seen anything. It was like I was in a movie. I'm like, am I being punked here? Every human is coding. No, there was no human interaction. No one was sending an email. Every one of them was coding. I'm like, this is one of the coolest, one of the most bizarre. It was something I'll never forget.
And what year was that? Do you remember? Oh, gosh.
That would have been like 09.
Yeah. Or 10. I was thinking it was the late aughts. So
9, 10, or 11, but I think it was 9, 10. It was in there.
I only asked because I'm sure that by now, all of those students you saw coding have made more money than they'll ever make. And they're all probably multimillionaires. And several, half of that group you saw is probably retired at this point.
More than half. One of them was probably coding to ChatGPT at the time. And now it's taken over the world. So
yeah. Andrew Luck needs to get on the phone and say, hey, did you see us lose to Hawaii? Open up the checkbook.
All right. One more comment on a game and then talk about the rest of the week. Tarleton State just, I don't even want to explain what they did to Portland State. Ugly. Tarleton, I think, is playing Army in week 1. Well, Army best be buckled. And I know Army always comes in chin straps buckled. They're ready to play. But that could be an interesting little ball game right there. All right, with that said, we're going podcast 3 days a week, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. Tuesday is the one everybody's been waiting for.
That's cool.
One bold prediction.
Yeah, Zach.
Hold up the finger. Hold up the finger to remind each and every one of you. One. I don't want to hear about, I thought about this, but I'm going this. I just want to hear your one bold prediction. I don't want to hear any of this soft, could have been this, could have been. All right. Everybody got rules.
Strong. I've established the word one, the number one. Have you established the word bold?
Oh. Yes. Yeah, I'm going to give a, since we can only name one on Tuesday, I'm going to give a bonus today.
Incredible.
Bold prediction. Kentucky is not beating Texas, Zach.
Bold.
Okay.
One bold prediction Tuesday, Thursday. We're going to talk some Thursday, Friday, Saturday slates. Amazing. Oh, and there's Sunday and Monday too. Let's do this, gentlemen. Y'all have a great weekend. Great Sunday. Spend some time with God, and we'll see everybody Monday. Football Scoop Podcast is out.